It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Dave, what's up, man?
What's up, brother? Man?
Yeah,
nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you as well. What's going on, folks? Chris Phillips here. He is Dave's shoemate. This is the SEC Unfiltered Hour. Again, guys, in case the first time you're checking us out, yesterday being our debut, of course, we're going to be live right here on the Texas Sports Unfiltered platform, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern, really talking an array of topics from football, baseball, basketball, all things SEC. Of course, we'll touch on the Texas Longhorns because we know most of you in here. You bleed burnt orange, and it's a lot of fun to talk Texas, Oklahoma, the rest of the gang as well. But, yeah, I want to introduce Dave Shoemate. Like I mentioned to you guys yesterday, we had Dimitri Ivanis on as my sidekick yesterday. We will have sort of a rotating cast of characters as my co-host, and some days, heck, I won't even be here. So we got a big team here at SEC Unfiltered. Dave Shoemate of SEC Unfiltered, also of Mach 10 Sports. Dave, give the people just kind of an idea who you are, what you do, what Mach 10 Sports, and some of your SEC background as well. I know you and I talked off air, obviously. You're in a unique position because obviously you're not only a fan of SEC football, but you've worked behind the scenes at a few of these SEC programs.
Yeah, appreciate it, Chris. Like Chris mentioned, Dave Shoemate from Mach 10 Sports, me and Chris started collabing probably about 2 or 3 months ago on the SEC Unfiltered platform. So I appreciate him bringing me on. But I always thought I had like a unique perspective because I worked in college football for 10 years, with 7 of them being in the Southeastern Conference and the other 2 at UCF and at Kansas in the Big 12. Obviously, the Texas family being somewhat familiar with them. And then also out in the SEC, I lived in Texas for a bit. I worked at Texas A&M in 2017. Kevin Sumlin's last year, didn't sign a class with him, and then was blessed enough Jimbo Fisher retained me, so I got to keep my assistant director of player personnel title there. Was there in 18, then went and worked with Les Miles. But before that, I went to school in Alabama. That's how I got started there. Worked there as a student. First job out of college was at Miami, and then I went to Georgia, worked at the University of Georgia, Mark Ricks, last year in about 6 months with Kirby Smart. Then my boss at Alabama brought me over to Auburn. At Auburn, then Texas A&M, 17, 18, like I mentioned, Kansas, then UCF. So 10 years in college football. Obviously, we lived in seven places in 10 years. Wife kind of started to do anything. So she kind of wanted to start a family, do all that. So that's why I'm here. Wanted to, like Chris, like all of us who listen to sports podcasts or in the sports media world, love sports, wanted to keep my foot in it to some extent. And I work for QuickU as well, some oversells there. So we sell a recruiting database, college football recruiting database to schools as well. Texas A&M is one of our clients as well from that standpoint. But we probably have about 6 or 7 schools from that standpoint in the SEC. So still in it from that perspective, in it, I feel like now from a media perspective. So I get my fun with that. Me and Chris collabing back and forth on the SEC Unfiltered platform. So that's really my background, personnel, evaluation, recruiting background, in that support staff role that I think's becoming ever more important as the time goes on here with especially in the NIL world.
Dave, it's fascinating. You worked at Texas A&M, and hopefully the folks here won't hold it against you too much. I'm sure they won't. But I'm curious though. I want to talk about that. What was the, since obviously again we're here on Texas Sports Unfiltered, and again we're going to spend a lot of time talking Longhorns, the entire SEC, of course, but naturally when in Rome, right, we're going to talk a lot of Texas. But what was the view of Texas while at Texas A&M? Was it something where, like, the rival was talked about a bunch and that was, like, made a focal point? Like, hey, we need to make sure – maybe not we're keeping up with the Joneses, but make sure we're outdoing – because, like, I think there's a misconception. It's like, you know, I'm in the Palmetto State, so South Carolina and Clemson. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what it is. They're always – you're always comparing yourself to the rival, whether people want to admit it or not. Like,
well, it's like that, you said, very yeah, similar to Texas, Texas A&M, because they weren't the same conference. I mean, now they are, but you're right. That's a good comparison.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering. Was it always kind of like you guys in the building were, hey, what is Texas doing? And I guess you were there, too, when, like, Texas was – down
that was
out.
Tom. I mean, it was Tom Herman's
yeah
first offseason. And we're you know this, Chris. You followed recruiting. That first offseason for a new staff, you're undefeated. I mean, literally, there's nothing opposing teams can really throw. Because remember, he was coming from Houston, so people in Texas were familiar with, oh, you went and beat Florida State in the Peach Bowl that year. Man, y'all were really good. Like you're undefeated, so there's nothing you can really combat that with. That's your best time to go hit the recruiting momentum in that first year and go have some success on the field. Now, if I remember right, I think Texas went 7-5, 6-6, Herman's first year. I think won the Texas Bowl, beat Missouri, if I remember right. There's the whole Drew Locke. What was it? The whole Tom Herman. I think that was his first maybe stay, whatever it was. But no, so when we were going against Herman, that was kind of someone's – you remember that hot seat year going into his last year, that 17 year? It was almost like – I think 16 A&M started off 6-0, 7-0, and then lost, I think, what – 5 out of the last 6 to finish 7-5 and play in the Texas Bowl. But that was like Trevor Knight was quarterback. Mm-hmm. You had Christian Kirk, and then back then Miles Garrett was the number one overall pick my first spring there. So you had some dudes there, Deshaun Hall, the edge defender. But we were really playing at Texas. It was tough because they were beating us on all the in-state kids. I mean, that was the year you had Javonte Shepherd, for the Texas fans who remember, who ended up going to Texas. You had – a couple of those defensive backs. What was her name? That's kind of when Zach Evans was bouncing around, the running back from Houston North Shore. We had Leon O'Neal. We ultimately got Leon O'Neal. Who were some of the other guys? It was someone like Jalen Cook and guys like that, a lot of those Houston kids. But Herman and them were beating us because it's kind of the opposite ends. Herman was just getting in there. It's Sam Ellinger kind of battling it out then. Then someone was on his way out. And then when we blew that – Texas fans will remember that. I remember that Sunday night game. We were playing UCLA in the Rose Bowl, and we blew the 42-7 lead. Josh Rosen. I'll never forget that game. That's more of one of those games like, dude, literally nothing in that second. We were up 35 at half. It's like everything from the clock to a penalty to any negative yardage like had to happen. It break their way in the second half, and it did. I think he had one incompletion in the second half, and we did everything we could. But so that was – I remember that. It was like once we lost that, it was like someone's gone. And I think we went on a little streak, ended up being 5-2 at some point, lost Alabama. But you knew that was when the dam broke. So kind of when I got to A&M, it was kind of opposite. But then the next year I got retained, Jimbo has all the momentum. He hasn't lost a game. Now, granted, things didn't settle as well at Florida State as they did when Herman was leaving Houston. They're a lot better. Obviously, Jimbo, I think, finished with a 500 losing record, I think, the last year at Florida State. So it's a little different, but Jimbo kind of brought that, like, swag, some stuff about him a little bit that I think a lot of other A&M coaches didn't have. We won 8 games that first year, beat LSU in that 7 overtime game. That was Joe Burrow's last college loss. So we did that. So positive momentum there. So competing with Texas, it was always the big thing, Chris, to really answer your question. So just wanted to set the tone. Back then, you could say, hey, come play in the SEC. Because remember, that's when the SEC was in the midst of that big streak, and then Clemson finally ended it. I think Ohio State ended it in 14, and then Clemson kind of started matching tails with Alabama. But it was like, hey, I mean, dude, look how many – for defensive players, Chris, you put presentations together. And when I was there, I was thinking it was like the Big 12 had maybe 2 first-round defensive draft picks. The conference in general had 2 first-round draft picks in like a 10-year span. And it was almost like you would use the SEC against Texas and be like, hey, you Texas kids, y'all want to come play in the best conference? There's only one school in the state. If you're wanting to stay in state between the Aggie network and – you're going to go against the best of the best. We're putting defensive players in the NFL from a league standpoint, from an A&M standpoint, because you're still fresh off Miles Garrett going number one. You had Armani Watts at safety. You had some guys. The defenses weren't great, but you had some individual players. So you'd use the SEC against them because the Big 12 defensively, as you can remember, was just not a good league back then.
I'm just thinking, Dave, so your last year in college football is what, 2018, 2019?
No, 2021 at UCLA.
2021. Okay. I was going to ask. So you did experience, well, I guess you probably got out just before NIL and Portal really.
NIL literally started July 1st of that summer. Then we played that season. So I was there like the first day. But again, it's evolved more and more every year. But yeah, really the last year and a half, 2 years, I wasn't in college football for the last year and a half. How it is turned into more of the salary cap stuff.
People
are kind of dipping their toes in the water.
Are you glad you missed that?
Yes and no. I mean, I talked to some guys in the SEC, and some of them have have those conversations with the families and stuff about, hey, this is how much we're going to pay and whatnot. I would like to have those conversations, but at the same time, I don't miss getting a call at 9, 10 o'clock at night when you're trying to hang out with your family and being like, hey man, John Smith over here, he's saying Alabama's offering X amount. Like that's 50 grand more than we, and again, that's what's the problem. You don't know if that's true or not, because there's no market. You can't go look anything up. So it's like this guy and his, I guess, partnership, his party, maybe making stuff up. So just dealing with stuff outside of that. Not saying anybody's, I love the grind, working, stuff like that, but the constant communicate used to be graphics. Now that's not even, kids aren't going anywhere. I mean, if a kid's going somewhere because of graphic now, I mean, this kid's like 5 years behind. It used to be like, hey man, did you see a sick graphic South Carolina put out with Jonathan King or Justin King and them and all this video? That was like the arms race. Mm. Now it was totally now I can imagine. And again, some of the recruiting guys don't deal with it, but some do and are in those conversations. So I can imagine their phones constantly getting blown off the hook like a lot of these head coaches.
More of a grind, Dave, working in recruiting or the content grind?
The content grind, the content grind, some of it's more in your control, but hell, if there's a breaking news, you got to do a reaction deal. So I shouldn't say that. Probably similar, but for different reasons. Hmm. Like you said, I always tell people all the time, it's like, man, you think, man, I worked in college football for 10 years. Why wouldn't someone listen to me? It's like, dude, if you don't know, nobody knows you're out there between that. I mean, you've talked about it off air. You're not marketing yourself and stuff like that. So it's close. It's close. I'd probably say the content grind to some extent, a little bit.
Because at least I feel like when you're working in college football, like if you've got that A&M logo or that Texas logo or that whatever, like you have that sort of that
more in those Chris, more of those like more staff roles and recruiting roles in college football. It's more putting out fires,
right?
Like, all right, let's get his transcript in advance. Let's make sure he's on path. All right, well, this class ain't going to transfer, so we got to make sure his last semester he's getting in this class that will transfer to. Like, it's putting out fires beforehand. Or like, hey, XML. All right, they're wanting to add another kid. You can only pay up to two of the kid and two official visitors. Inevitably, I know I'm saying this and people are going, well, that's cheating. Everybody's paying under the radar for great grandma or little cousin or sister son who's coming too under the table. Figuring stuff out like that, like, hey, how can we get the alcohol paid for dinner? How can we get that on the receipt so we can turn that into compliance so they know? Stuff like that. It's just different. But you're right. The content grind, I completely underestimated the grind until I actually got into it.
Yeah, it is I think a lot of people do underestimate it. I mean, I've been doing it for a while, but it truly, truly never sleeps, never stops. So, which again, I know you know that firsthand now. I'm curious, like, we'll get off this, and obviously we got other things to talk about, like I mentioned, football, baseball, basketball, all across the board when it comes to the SEC, Texas included. Craziest recruiting story you've got from your time? Is there one that stands, or like, just – you know, I'm assuming you dealt on that side of things, the recruiting, and obviously you dealt with personnel, but like craziest story from your time. You don't have to mention names or whatever if you don't want to, but I'd have to imagine you saw and heard some pretty wild stuff.
Craziest recruiting
story. And a follow-up to that, again, so you were at these schools when social media is running rampant, and we see stuff all the time. How often do you feel like when fans are talking on social media, because like there's a difference in like we're talking the entire SEC and then the folks that follow each individual team that are like super, super locked in, right? There's drama and rumors and chatter that just happens that, you know, you're not as plugged into, right? If you're just talking the entire league or whatever. So how much of that is fans actually know what they're talking about and they've got the inside scoop of the program, and how much of that stuff on a day in, day out basis is made up? You know what I mean? Because I feel like there's a lot of drama that is, when you're so close to a program, there's things you hear, things to the grapevine. Some of it's true, some of it's not, some of it's kind of in between. So how much do you feel like those fan bases are actually in the know, or they just think they're in the know?
I would probably,
was there Chris, stuff you see on social media?
You followed a rabbit. You were on a rabbit fan base beat for a while. So I care. Dude, there's a lot of fans out there that, like, I sit right now sometimes and I'm like, man, I don't know if I'd listen to just a random podcast that just talks about a kid OV and like the five different players. It's just not very exciting to me. Mm-hmm. But there's people who do, and some of these people go do their own research and stuff. I can like find out stuff that sometimes the school is like, I remember we would do for Jimbo at Texas A&M, he always like recruiting news and little nuggets. We'd pass out the staff. We'd do that after he'd go over the injury report with the trainer. Like, he'd go over that, and then he'd like to know what's going on, just piggyback off coaches' questions. And there'd be little insights and stuff in these articles, and he'd be like, did you know that? Or something like, hey, you go circle something and you go bring it on a coach's desk. And they go investigate. There'd always be a little something to it. It may not be the whole truth, but some of these fans, like in the SEC, I think a lot of it, these fans do know a lot more than people think. Maybe not the complete truth, but a lot closer to it. Just because I think they're a lot more rabid and they care more. Crazy recruiting story. I mean, I'll tell two here. One wouldn't be that crazy on how many. When I was at Georgia, I mean, the big thing you give out is gear. That was a big thing kids liked. That's when you were starting to collect. And the kid we went and stacked all this gear for, literally, like buckets of Georgia gear, like team issued gear, ended up not even coming to Georgia. Went to a ride. So I'm like, what did he do with all that? I was like, dude, we gave that guy three like literal like trunks worth of like the plastic moving crate things worth. Like, you're like, dude, he didn't even go, like, who did he give that to? Like, I mean, I'm sure he didn't sell it, but who did he give that to? There'd be some times when you were a student, you go under the radar to like a camp because you were trying back then, like 15, 16, you didn't get the camp film. And what fans don't understand is like those live camp films you get from like UC Report, Underclassmen Report on ESPN now, like the Under Armour camp, the Nike Adidas, the opening camp, you used to couldn't get that as easy. So we'd have to kind of go under the radar and go film that live from a stadium. Back then, nobody had like the phone cameras anymore, so you wouldn't have been known there. So that was a little like black ops as a student thing you do. But then I would say, I mean, you had your typical, like when I was with Gus, a kid at Auburn told us literally on the phone he was coming like 10 minutes before his announcement. And then we go watch it on ESPN and he commits elsewhere. I think that's happened to a lot of people. That's just a little bit like, wow. What the hell? Wow. It was almost like, what's the gain in telling us
what, this? What's the follow-up with the kid after that? Like, what is – do you even shoot him a text? Do you even
– Coach was emotional, so no, I don't think he even – this was before, like, maybe the bounce-back transfer portal where it's like, dude, I may just have to be nice and swallow this pill because what if he doesn't like it there? And
like, emotional pissed off. Like, he was pissed off.
Yeah, but back then – but that was 17, 18 when the portal wasn't a thing, so it was kind of like, oh, okay, we'll never see this kid until we play them. So you could almost kind of be like – F yourself a little bit. Now it's kind of like, well, shoot, you can't be, you know, you can't be too big of a sore loser in recruiting because if you finish number two, if he went in the portal again, he may be real interested in coming back to you. So you kind of got to keep that relationship. Craziest coach story that people would probably laugh their ass off about would be, I mean, if you probably went and looked at where I've worked, you could figure it out. But I had a head coach, and when you're doing spring and fall travel, it's like, I think it'd be like an airport. I think it would be like an airplane, like coordinator would be in an airport. Like you're just making sure these guys get to point A to point B. Well, anyways, we got our coach. It's in this back. He's in New Orleans, like the ninth ward. We're going to visit this kid and him and the position coach. You always send the head coach with a position coach. He's not, the head coach isn't going in. You get one in-home visit in the contact period. The head coach isn't going by himself. He's going with probably a coordinator and a position coach. But this time it was just the position coach. And dude, this head coach had to go to the bathroom so bad. When he got from the airport, the private jet, and driving from the New Orleans airport to the kid's front yard, the head coach urinated in their front yard. We ended up not getting the kid because of it. So that was a crazy story. But he did. He had to go see.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I mean, hey, head coach is usually looking for reasons to blame somebody for not getting a kid. At that point, you can only blame yourself.
And we've gotten the comments, a couple guesses of who it is. And, you know, just like you said, you can probably figure it out. You can probably figure it out. Also, the thing I took away, Dave, from what you said is that these coaches, even though they say they don't, they're definitely listening to every podcast and reading every article and reading everything on social media and getting it fed to them. Yeah, that's happening. That's happening.
Oh, dude, there's
some more coaches
in the league that'll like, it's probably in a shocking movie, but search themselves and they'll go reach out and DM people if they say something bad about it. I've never understood
come on,
that.
Come on, no way.
Dude,
one
coach in the league, I know for a fact, which I'm almost a little bit like
Chris, one of them. I'm going to say this. One of them has to be Shane Beamer. Has to be.
I haven't heard Shane Beamer. Wouldn't shock me if Shane Beamer, and I worked with Shane for like 6 months that first year at Georgia when he's the tight end coach. Great dude, great human being. it wouldn't shock me if he did that, because I think like, I don't think he cares about what people say about him from a positive standpoint. I think he's just an overly emotionally fiery guy, like kind of protects that. This guy, though, I'm talking about, it does it is more into his own ego about it, and will reach out, DM people like, hey, why would you say that about me? So, you know, this random fan's probably like, coach, just. But it's got to be a hack. You go look in, it's like, this guy's got 100,000 followers.
That's insane.
I've never understood why you would, if you made that much money, $8, $9, $10 million like these dudes, you think I would even read the comments, like what you're saying about me? Like, not from like a I'm better than you standpoint, but it's like, dude, I don't really care.
I mean, they've all got egos, but that's certainly taken to insane proportions. Guys, we are taking your questions, your comments for sure. Interactive, would love to hear from you. Jack Burton, I want to get to this one, Dave. He says, I don't know if I can do this whole conference loyalty thing. I guess I'm too Southwesterner, but how do all the other fan bases truly feel about us coming to the SEC, us being Texas? Dave, from the folks you've interacted with, and I would say this too about the conference loyalty thing. I don't think the conference loyalty thing is from a standpoint of like everybody's necessarily pulling for everyone else, because the hatred is rampant in the SEC. But maybe there's more of, Dave, like a mutual respect, even fans that loathe the team. But like, you have this sort of respect because you're all going to the same grind. You know what I mean? Like, and that's how it works on the field and programs. Like, you can hate a certain team, you can hate a program, but you have a respect for your opponent at the end of the day. I think it's more that. But Dave, and the folks you've interacted with, how would you say people feel about Texas and Oklahoma, but Texas in this instance coming to the SEC? I think for the most part, people are really excited, fired up, what it means to the league. I think there's some that are kind of beating their chest, that, and maybe some deservedly so, some not so much deservedly so. But your overall, like, what if your takeaways, your thoughts, how people feel about Texas coming to the league?
Just initially how they, I think people are fired up about it. I mean, I think just what comes to mind initially, I'm from Mississippi originally, about to move to Atlanta, so prime Southeast area. But so I have some Mississippi State and Ole Miss friends. So obviously Mississippi State's going out to Austin this year. Also Georgia, know some Georgia people. They're fired up about that trip to Austin this year. I think Kentucky, I think a little bit Texas fans will be surprised how much Big Blue Nation travels for the first time for a football game to Austin. I think Florida going there, I think a lot of people are fired up for that trip. I have some Mississippi State buddies. I think they play at Arizona State at a conference, and then they usually pick two games a year to go to, and they're going to Austin and the game in Tempe or in Phoenix. So that'll be fun. So I think a lot of people are fired up about the trip. I think a lot of people are fired up about a true blue blood athletics department, not just football, coming in to the Southeastern Conference. I mean, we talk about it. I mean, really all sports and from Texas. I mean, Texas is good. I don't even have to name them. I mean, what sport is Texas not good at? I mean, as they should be, one of the higher budget athletics departments in the country. But again, I think overall for Texas, I would say the conference is pretty fired up about it. I guess maybe except Texas A&M would be, if I'm being realistic looking at it from a negative side, would probably be the only fan base that wasn't overly jacked. But I know Ross Bjork was open about it, but he's since moved to Ohio State as the AD. So I hadn't heard a statement from Trev Alberts, the new AD. But I don't know how fired up they are, because I think, like I mentioned, when I worked at Texas A&M, Texas A&M fans, very loyal. Texas fans are very aware. People call it a cult kind of deal. They're very loyal to the Aggies. And they liked being that only team in the SEC in the state of Texas that could put that SEC patch on. I think it was kind of like, I think they were what people would kind of make fun of from an SEC standpoint, where like it was like Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida at the time with Tebow and Percy Harvin and Urban, and then winning national championships, even though mixture of Auburn at times. I think people would be like, these SEC teams like Kentucky and them doing the SEC stuff, I think they would kind of get a little annoyed at Texas A&M, because Texas A&M really never, I guess, carried the weight a little bit of that standpoint. But you could tell Texas A&M, when I got there, light kind of being like, oh, yeah, we got the SEC over that fading Big 12 conference. Like, they could tell they'd like that. So I would say overall, the other, and I guess Oklahoma too, so 14 out of the 16 teams are probably real fired up, or 13, Texas not including themselves, are real fired up about it.
And, guys, like I mentioned yesterday, SEC Unfiltered, we cover football, of course, 24/7, 365, but also baseball, basketball, all the sports we touch on. Dave and I actually did a lot of work together recapping, breaking down these games during March Madness. We had full March Madness coverage throughout the college basketball season and college baseball as well. So on that note, and Dave, obviously big baseball guy, big basketball guy, really well-rounded all around. Dave, just a big sports guy in general, which we love. Dave, and that's a great segue. I want to jump into this. We dropped a segment on YouTube today, which go check us out, SEC Unfiltered. Highly encourage you guys hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, SEC Unfiltered on YouTube. You can go check out the full segment. But, Dave, I want to get your thoughts on this. And we got the video clip. I'm going to show the video just in case there's anybody in the chat right now, anybody in the live show that has not seen it. Georgia pitcher looks like he's cheating. Looks like he's putting a sticky substance on the glove. Okay, I'm going to show the video, and then I want to get your thoughts on, number one, if you think he was doing it, and number two, if he was, what the SEC should do. So bear with me. I haven't shown the video. Okay, so Dave, the only other thing, I will say this, the only other thing he could have been doing is fixing the laces. I've actually got, Dave, with me, I got a glove here. I have my own glove. Very similar to what he was wearing with the laces here on the outside. Only thing he could have been doing is fixing these laces right here. But I'm not sure if you saw John Boy Media. They dropped a video on this, and it zoomed in. It showed him on the mound. There's too many coincidences here. I think 110%. He's putting a sticky substance on the glove, which is obviously cheating. And, of course, this happened last weekend, Georgia-Texas A&M series in College Station. Some student or fan of Texas A&M got the video they posted on Barstool Texas A&M, and this thing has blown up since. Barstool Sports is running with it, all kinds of different college baseball and just baseball accounts in general. Number one, do you think he was putting a sticky substance on the glove? I know you have to make somewhat of an assumption, but – do you think it's a fair assumption that that's what was taking place?
Yeah. I mean, unless you're a Georgia fan or just a very glass half empty baseball period or glass half full baseball purist, and you're just like, there's no way. But outside of those two things, I would say, I mean, come on. Yeah, he is. And then, like you said, I think the John Boy Media video with the camera work of it zooming in every time there's a different foul ball, you can tell he went back to the laces. I mean,
when you're constantly touching the same spot, that's the giveaway. That's the giveaway.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this then, Dave. What do you do if you're the SEC? Like, because here's the thing. Because when I first heard this, Dave, admittedly, like, I just posted the clip this morning. It took me about 24 hours. Like, okay, this is a pretty big story. This is noteworthy. Let's run this. Because I played college baseball. I come from the school of baseball. I love baseball. Like, this is so normalized for me that I didn't even think it was a big deal. Like, number one, there's no, like, hard proof after the fact. Number two, everybody's doing this, or a lot of guys are doing this. But the problem is you were dumb enough to do it out in the open. Like, if you do this, do it in the dugout. Do it in the clubhouse. Do it on the bus before the game. You can't do it in the bullpen where you know people have camera phones. They have cameras. They're able to record you, and they're going to see it.
Especially at a visiting park.
A visiting park, exactly. So I think the SEC, Dave, and I want to get your thoughts, but I think the SEC, I don't know what they can do after the fact from the standpoint, like, you can't go look at his glove and get a 100% yes, there is a sticky substance here, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt. But, I mean, Dave, in this situation, like, doesn't it just feel so obvious looking at the first video, then looking at, like, the John Boy stuff with, like, the zoomed in and what, like, it feels so obvious. I feel like the SEC has to do something here. Here's why. Because if you don't, if I'm a pitcher at Arkansas, Florida, Texas A&M, South Carolina, like anybody else, why am I not now using pine tar on my glove or sticky substances or whatever? Like, I feel like you kind of have to. I'm not saying suspend the kid for the whole season, but suspend him for the weekend. I think you have to suspend him for the weekend. Like, I think they have to do something. I don't think nothing is the right response here.
No, I agree with you. I think you have to set a precedent because, like you said, again, I don't know what they can do from this standpoint. Like, I mean, yeah, you have video and that is some evidence, but you don't know what the evidence is he's putting on. You're assuming you're at 99% there. Like I said, where there's smoke, there's probably fire, and it looks like there's definitely there's a lot of smoke there. So I just don't know if they can go back and do something. But you're right, though. You're just encouraging other guys, other pitchers coming out of the bullpen in the middle of the game to do that, because they're kind of like, well, shoot, this guy just got killed on social media. That was about it. You know, like, and they've shown if I can just get away with this throughout the weekend, there's nothing they can do, and they're not going to do. So, like you said, you're encouraging this behavior. But, again, I don't know what they can do. My dad used to be a minor league umpire in college, but he was like a conference, just a Sun Belt, did some double-A stuff. And I was asking him about it the other day, and he was like, really, if you wanted to blame somebody, the umpire should have stopped. And, again, I mean, it's pretty obvious he's rubbing something on his glove each time. And, again, it's late in the game. It's eighth, ninth inning, a doubleheader day. It was a doubleheader, Georgia and A&M. Yeah, because the first game was when A&M blew – or Georgia blew the 9-0 lead. So this was the second game. And he remember what he came back and Christian came back and pitched. What, he struck out six straight guys.
Yeah.
You could tell that sticky stuff, like the John Boy Media guy's video did it well. It's like you could tell that he was hanging on to his finger late and he was getting that rise on that fastball up and away. And it, I don't know. It just, like my dad was saying from talking to him as an umpire, he felt like the umpires, if you wanted to blame somebody, it's the umpire. But at this point, what are you going to go do? It's like you said, I'm sure they'll go check his glove this weekend before their series against Vanderbilt. And I'm sure they'll do that. And they'll probably be like, hey, let's be on the lookout, guys. They'll probably notify the whole league. Okay, like, hey, you need to probably be on the lookout. Let's at least from a perception standpoint, from an umpire standpoint, from the SEC, let's at least look like we're trying. We're interested in finding out what's going on.
Yeah, I think they got to do something. I will be, you know, again, maybe after the fact, to your point, the umpire should have stopped play. After the fact, I don't know if they're going to suspend the kid at all, but it's just, again, it's one of those things. Like, I was a pitcher in college. Like, I'm a former pitcher, so, like, I'm on the side of the pitchers. But I also, believe it or not, like, I sympathize with these hitters. Like, guys, pitchers are throwing harder than ever. And then, so, like, you know, back in the old days when it's like Greg Maddux and like you're throwing 85, 86 and you got to be able to spin it and make it dance. Like, I get it. I got more sympathy on the pitcher side. But like, dude, you're already throwing 96 miles an hour. Yeah. Like, how much more of an advantage do you need? You know what I mean? Like, I think they got to do something. I
agree with you.
I think suspension's warranted.
I agree with that. It's just, I don't know if they, I would lean towards they probably don't, but I agree with you because you're setting a bad precedent for the rest of the season with it. I don't know how much a starter could get away with it. You know what I mean? And starting pitch is a little different than just coming out of the pen and you can doctor something up on your glove before you roll out there. And you know, like, hey, I got enough of this to last me. I'm not probably going longer than two innings here out of the pen. And I know the starter can come in and out of the dugout, but yeah, you're more likely to see it out of some bullpen guys here in the future. Cause again, there's no risk. If they don't do anything, these guys are like, at worst, somebody's going to film me, is a potential suspect of this, and it'll be on social media for a little bit. Like, okay, if I strike out six guys in a row and we win the game, that's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I will be curious to see what comes down from this. On the other side, though, you mentioned Texas A&M. They erased that 9-0 deficit. They won that game 19-9, which was crazy. Arkansas leads the West right now in the Diamond, 16-5 record in SEC play. Kentucky also 16-5 in the East. They meet up this weekend. What's been your biggest takeaways to this point in the season? Omaha contenders, pretenders. What's been the biggest shockers or surprises to you at this point in the season? I feel like the biggest one, the low-hanging fruit, is – we talk about how deep the league is, all the teams that are ranked, but two of those teams that aren't, Florida and LSU, who have just been abysmal. I mean, they've been abysmal this year.
Chris, keeping that streak up, man. If you're a national champion with Mississippi State back in 21 and then Ole Miss doing it in 22, LSU did it in 23, is it the streak going to continue where you do not make the postseason, the NCAA tournament, after winning the national championship, especially in the SEC? You're right. That's a low-hanging fruit. The initial shockers are LSU sitting there at 7-14, Florida there at 9-12. I thought it was a big loss for LSU. I know they won the series, but I thought it was a big loss for them on Sunday against Auburn. Like, the spot LSU's in, they needed to sweep them.
Yeah, when you're in that position, you got an Auburn team that's won.
Then you're staring at, like you mentioned, the Texas A&M team rolling in. I know it's at Alex Box, but, I mean – realistically, I think most people think A&M will at least get two. I'm not ready to say A&M's going to go sweep, but I'm at least expecting them to win the series. Then LSU goes, what, two Tuscaloosa? A winnable series. Alabama's solid in Rob Vaughn's first year. But again, it's on the road. Alabama's been pretty good at home. I think Alabama's better than LSU. I would take that. And they play Ole Miss at home, which they could definitely win that series. But what are they doing at that point if they've lost to A&M and Alabama in the series? There's much to play for. Florida just can't seem to get right. Those midweek games are tough. From a positive standpoint, I mean, Kentucky, the Batcats, 16-5. I know they lost back-to-back tough series to Tennessee and South Carolina, but you got to like what they're doing. Nick Mangione and them. Arkansas, I feel like Dave Van Horn just every year just dominating. I shouldn't say dominate, but always in that top three of the SEC. Their pitching staff, it will be – I almost want to ask you, Chris, who do you trust more at TD Ameritrade, at a park like that? Do you trust an Arkansas team? It's got the pitching staff and a big park, but the stick, the offense is going to not consistently be there night in, night out. Or do you trust a team like Tennessee? Because I feel like Tennessee and Arkansas are a little different. I think A&M is a complete – 1 through 9 lineups, a complete pain in the tail. Mm. Pitching staff's gotten better. But Arkansas, Tennessee is that second kind of battling for that Omaha spot where Tennessee's can hit well. They hit for a lot of power, but they'll go 9 or 10 straight outs because they're just not getting singles. They're a big power team. I don't know if that plays well in TD Ameritrade. So I'd probably go with the pitching staff. I mean, I know you're a pitcher. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm always going to lean the side of the pitching. I think I really do believe dominant pitching, I mean, wins in the postseason. And really the team that, you know, that wins it all. I mean, you got to be complete, certainly. I mean, we look at LSU last year. They had both sides of it. But, you know, it's – why did LSU win it all? Their arms outside of Paul Skeens stepped up. Like, I mean, they just – you've got to – you know, you talk about to win the College World Series, you got to get hot at the right time. Really, your arms have got to get hot at the right time. Like, you've got to be able to shut people down. Of course, the hitting's got to be there. That's a given. I mean, if you don't hit, you don't have a chance. But it's because your arms take it to a next level, become dominant. Like, I mean, we're seeing LSU's arms this year revert back to being very average, if not below average. And these are guys that assisted in winning that College World Series. I would say this, over the last, you know, you mentioned Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and those teams missed the postseason the last couple of years. LSU is the most shocking, though, of that group. Like, I mean, this LSU team is talented. I mean, they're really talented. And so what's happened with them this year, I mean, it's stunning. I mean, it is. And, I mean, Texas saw them early in the year in that tournament in Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, it's shocking. It is, and I'm so excited, by the way. I know we spend so much time talking football, but I'm so excited to see Texas and Oklahoma as well. Oklahoma's having a great season right now. But to see those two teams join the league this year, or excuse me, next year, and be part of SEC baseball, make the best league in the country that much better.
That was a fun – Chris, that was a fun series last weekend. I put that on for a little bit. Wait, Oklahoma took the first one, and Texas came back and won the next two.
Yeah, and then Texas in the final game, it's 12-10 in the eighth inning, and they call the ball game. So, I'm sure OU fans are thrilled about that. But, no, it's going to be a lot of fun, man. I mean, I think, obviously, having Texas in the league and the great history and tradition. You know, it's interesting, though. We talk about how much pressure is on Mike Elko and Texas A&M football because of, you know, this sense of urgency, because here comes Steve Sarkisian, Quinn Ewers, and the Texas Longhorns went to the College Football Playoff last year. They're expected by most as a lock for the playoff this year. That same pressure is being felt, I think, by Texas baseball, because you look at A&M, I mean, they're number one in the country, and it's almost like that's not necessarily what you'd expect. And they have Jim Schlossnagel, and you know, I think there's some – his name is escaping me right now, but the Texas baseball head coach, there's some pressure there. I mean, there's really some pressure there. But
David Pierce.
Yes. There's some pressure there, because it's like you see what A&M's doing. And again, they've got Schlossnagel, who's, you know, I thought that was a fantastic hire when they brought him on. So,
Pierce has been to what? Two World Series, and they lost in the Supers last year.
But it's a what have you done for me lately, man. It just –
you're
is.
Right. Like you said, LSU obviously didn't get rid of Jay Johnson this year, but you go miss a regional at LSU, that kind of shouldn't say decimates the national title, because they're going to put that up on the Intimidator. People always remember that team, one of the better teams I can remember in my life. But it kind of diminishes a little bit, like, hey, dude, like, if we don't make it to Omaha, it's a failure every year. Much less, it's like almost our birthright to get to the NCAA tournament. Are you kidding me? And much less if you miss Hoover, if you're one of the bottom two teams, which I don't think they get to that point. Yeah. I think they make Hoover, but still.
I would say for programs like LSU, Texas, you could throw Florida in here. I'm just thinking about, like, you know, because it's baseball – baseball in the SEC is different, but it's not built equally at every school. Let's just call it for what it is. Like, not every single fan base feels the same about it. There's some schools that, you know, they like baseball. There's others that love baseball. There's others that live, breathe, eat, and sleep baseball when it's baseball season. So LSU, Texas, Florida, you know, I don't even know Florida. I don't know if you throw them in there.
Yeah, I think Mississippi State, Ole Miss, or in that conference, Arkansas. Yeah, State, Ole Miss.
I think South Carolina is a very, very passionate baseball.
I'm with you overall. This is my alma mater. Like, I don't really think Alabama and Auburn fans like baseball. It's definitely the distant third out of the big three sports.
Yeah. I was going to say, though, like so to your point there, those schools, this may not apply, but I feel like at a place like Texas or LSU, you can miss one postseason. If you miss two in a row, you're gone. You're gone. Like, it's that simple. It's really that simple. Yeah. And people might think those expectations are crazy, but I mean, to your point, man, like, there's never an excuse for a program like Texas baseball, or there's never an excuse for them not to be in the postseason.
Well, this is Pierce's second time to do this, I think, Chris, going back. I think it was in 2020 or 2021, they totally missed the postseason. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like Omaha, super regional, or we're not even making the tournament.
And their record right now, I'm trying to get it pulled up, they are 27-18, it looks like.
Yeah, they got a high 50 20, RPI, I think.
Yeah, right, 13-8 in conference. So they're going to make the postseason. There's no threat, or at least right now, it looks like they should be good. But I'm just making the point. Again, we're talking LSU, the terrible season they're having. The pressure will be on Jay Johnson going into next year, for sure. Switching gears, Dave, really quickly. This was a fun thing that came up today. You may have already seen it, so I may be wasting my time. And I'm sure many of the folks here in our chat and our live show, they know the answer to this as well. But which three SEC football teams does Texas football have a losing record against? So Texas, obviously, beginning life as a member of the SEC, graphic was posted today. Their records, all-time records, against every single SEC member institution right now. Who are the three that they are either 500 or have a losing record against?
I saw a scroll pad. I don't say I can guess what it is. Vandy's one, right?
Vandy is one. Vandy is one. And the fun part about this is, like, the three, they're not three you would expect. They're not the three you'd expect.
Let's go Vandy, Kentucky.
Not Kentucky. No, they're 1-0 all time against Kentucky.
Let's go Vandy. Them and Arkansas used to play a lot in the Southwest Conference. So I don't think it's Arkansas.
No, they got a 56-23 record against
Arkansas. That's what I'm saying. They collected some wins when they were all in the same conference consistently. In the SEC, let's go South Carolina.
They are 0-1 against South Carolina. Vandy was hell apparently in the 1920s. So,
well, then they used to be in the same conference with Missouri and A&M, so they collected wins. It's not either one of them. Tennessee?
No, they are 2-1 against Tennessee. I think that was their last meeting, the Baker Mayfield in Neyland game, or what was that?
That was Oklahoma. That was Oklahoma.
When was the last time Texas and Tennessee?
Dude, I can't remember the last time.
I apologize, Texas fans. I did not think Baker Mayfield played for Texas. I just completely.
You're right. It's been a while since then. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see when they get put in. It wouldn't shock me in 25 if they're playing. Mm.
So the other, I'll tell you this: the other Mississippi State. They are 2-2. They are 2-2 against Mississippi.
I knew they had a winning record against Alabama. I knew that. Yep. And Georgia, I was like, well, they beat Georgia.
Yeah, they're 4-1 against Georgia.
I was like, they've beaten Georgia. I was with you. I was like, I bet it's not the.
Hey, LSU is close, 9-8-1. So 9-8-1.
Last time I remember Texas and LSU playing was maybe a Cotton Bowl with Nick Saban when he was there, maybe 0-2. So Marcus Spears.
Texas fans will love highlighting this, by the way. They're 76-37-5 against Texas A&M. So it's been – I mean, that's – would you call that – let me ask you this, because there's a lot of debate, again, in the Palmetto State, which is where I'm at, about the South Carolina-Clemson rivalry, and is that a –
what's that all-time series, Chris?
So that's something like 74 – very similar, 74-38-3 or something. So Clemson fans love to say that is a domination, not a rivalry. Is that fair? If it's that margin, would you call that a domination?
What'd you say the A&M one? A&M?
A&M is 76-37-5.
Yeah, Texas hadn't.
So basically, we can say that Texas is Texas A&M's daddy.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, the school and the state, especially now they got the SEC logo. Yeah, for sure. Even without it. Yeah. A&M had, what, 2 or 3 years where they were probably better than A&M. Like Jimbo's prime when Herman was heading out, maybe that first year for Sark. But after that, it's been a while. I mean, you had some years where Charlie Strong and Kevin Sumlin was solid at A&M. But there's never – it's been a while since anyone's really had the stranglehold of it. Mm-hmm. Right now, you got to give Texas the advantage, obviously. But I think Elko's going to go in and do a good job. I can only imagine the pageantry and what Kyle Field will be like this year. I mean, that's the biggest game A&M has hosted at Kyle Field for them. I tell you this, an over 15 years. They've hosted Alabama in some big time games there, but it's Tech. They talk about how much they hate Texas in their own fight song. Not many teams put them. That's why you can't ever say Texas is like Texas A&M can't ever say they're not little brother, because it's like, dude, you literally talked about them in your fight song pretty regularly. Like saw Varsity's horns off, like stuff like that. It's been a total domination. I mean, the last time they played was that's the Justin Tucker walk-off field goal win in Kyle Field.
Yeah. So this football season, you can have one ticket. You can go to one game. Is it that A&M Texas game?
I think it's got to be, right? Right? My second one, I'll say this, Chris. You told me.
You know why it's not Bama Georgia? Because I think we have Bama Georgia fatigue.
Dude, I was literally going to say, there's
kind of fatigue.
My other one was going to be Georgia at Texas.
Yeah, that's going to be an Austin showdown.
Dude, apparently that weekend's going to be crazy. People probably listening right now. That's when they have the F1 racing big race. Apparently, really? Getting in that weekend, because you're having people coming from all over the world for that. So you have that. I mean, I know there's stuff going on in Austin all the time. It's the damn state capital. But, apparently that weekend's going to be massive for, like, hotels being out and stuff. So that'll be – again, if you were going to tell me for sure A&M Texas, but I think Texas or Georgia at Texas would be right after that. If you're telling me what games I'd be wanting one ticket to this year in the SEC.
By the way, South Carolina Clemson, it's 73-43-4 Clemson – ahead in that series. So 30 game advantage.
Right, similar.
Yeah, very similar. Yeah, indeed. College basketball. Let's touch on this just for a moment, Dave. Again, like I said, Dave Shumate does a fantastic job, not just football, talks football a lot, but baseball, basketball, we do it all at SEC Unfiltered. You know, it's funny, we were expecting, or at least we were told, Dave, to expect madness in the transfer portal when it came to football, but it's really been the basketball portal that has been pretty wild. The latest, Jonas Adu transferring from Tennessee, committing to Arkansas. Coach Cal has been very active. Mark Pope at Kentucky has been very active. Your thoughts on the portal and the latest movement? I know, again, right now it's all baseball. It's always football and basketball sort of. I feel like, Dave, basketball kind of takes a – you know, we talk about this from the content standpoint. Basketball just takes a back seat until it's basketball season, or essentially until it's like February. And
it's in a weird spot for people. Like you said, it's like it starts right when football season starts, the rivalry week, conference championships, or now the playoffs, and all the way through. Like you said, I feel like your casual college basketball fans kind of start tuning in. What would you say, mid-January?
It's so unfortunate for college basketball because, I mean, dude, like for example, like there's rivalry games that are being played before, like, around Thanksgiving. Like, why are we playing these important games late November? Like, why are you trying to – and I know that you got to schedule when you schedule, and, you know, you can't just, you know, schedule around football all the time. But, like, it does suck for college basketball, man, because it's impossible. And, I mean, it doesn't help that the college football playoff is expanding. Now what? The national title is going to be January 20th, I think. Yeah. It's going to go even longer. Yeah. So, like, I mean, I know you can't start the season after January the 20th, but – you know, it's like it's just so hard to get into. Like you're such in football mode. Hell, we don't want anything to take our attention away from football. So yeah, I would say if you're just like a casual watcher of college basketball, like even if you're a fan, but football's got your attention. I mean, yeah, I don't think you're tuning in until at minimum early January when conference play starts. I don't think anybody's tuning into non-conference play unless you're a fan of North Carolina or Duke or Kansas, and you're in one of those tournaments where, like, you're playing each other. But, like, nobody's tuning in to watch these games against, you know, Presbyterian College, and like nobody's watching those games. Yeah. You know, so.
And the college basketball has their moment. That whole week, that first round of NCAA tournament, which I love, and I know most people love. They own it. They own television. I mean, they own the marketing stream. Everybody does like their bracket for candy, stuff like that. So they own that. But my second favorite, I would say second, probably second favorite week. I'm telling you, Chris, is that feast week when you got all those college basketball tournaments. You got the Maui Invitational. You got like the Phil Knight. You got the Disney one in Orlando. All of them. And then you go into rivalry week starting on Thursday night, which is usually, I mean, Texas fans will get accustomed to it, but it's usually the Ole Miss Mississippi State Egg Bowl game, which is one of the more underrated rivalries in college football. I might say college sports. Well, college baseball, yes. College basketball, not as much. Granted, solid, both are solid this year, State making the tournament. But in college football, when both those teams are good, that's a very toxic rivalry.
Like, yeah, they nasty, do not like each very other. Nasty.
And that's what you have on Thanksgiving night after having all that turkey dressing and stuff. Like, it's phenomenal. They ever talk about bringing the A&M Texas game back to Thanksgiving? It'd be interesting to see how Texas would take to that, because they used to play that game Thanksgiving night. Can you imagine the doubleheader on that, Chris? If you had the Ole Miss Mississippi State game at like midday, competing with the NFL and the Cowboys, and you had the night game, the big one. You had Herb Street Fowler on the Texas A&M game. It'd be incredible. But I don't think college football was, because there's like three NFL games that day now.
Yeah.
So I think they'll just stick to that one game. But no, I mean. Yeah, college basketball doesn't really dominate. People don't tune in until probably about mid-January until conference play starts.
But there has been a lot of movement in the portal. Like, I mean, also, Bama got big news. What was the kid's name that was so big?
Grant Nelson's back.
Grant Nelson's back, yes.
Mark Sears, good chance. I'd probably say about 90% chance he's going to go through the NBA combine, and he'll come back. I mean, if he comes back, Alabama will probably be the overwhelming favorite. It doesn't mean they'll win it, but probably the overwhelming favorite heading into the 24-25 basketball season. I'm interested to see that scheduling format come out. You see that, Chris, the way they got that set up?
I did not.
You got two common opponents. They're just going to rotate one each year. So you're going to play, I think, like Alabama would probably play Auburn and either LSU or Mississippi State every year, and they're going to rotate when you play them twice. So you'll play three teams twice a year at home and away, but two of those three are your every year you play twice team. So it's going to rotate one year. I thought that was interesting.
Who do you think is going to have a better career, Mark Pope or John Calipari, at their respective schools?
Man, dude, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I did the reaction video to both of them on our deal and after Cal's press conference on SEC Unfiltered platform, if people want to go check that out. But, I mean, can I say – but I know it's kind of a cop-out, but honestly, I believe this. I think Cal's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Look, he's not just going the high school route anymore. I think this may be like – hey, you know what? I can go do this college transfer. I think he's got a little swag back, got that chip on his shoulder. He's going to go dip in the portal, as we see. You mentioned the Jonas Adu pickup today, which is crazy. Playing for Rick Barnes at Tennessee, transfers to go play for John. If I would have told you this last year, Chris, on April 30th, Jonas Adu is transferring from Tennessee to go to Arkansas to play for John Calipari, you'd be like, what?
Wouldn't have believed you. Yeah, wouldn't have believed you.
No, but he is. I think Cal's going to do well at Arkansas. Initially, I wasn't jacked about the Mark Pope hire, but I do think he's going to be a good fit. And I think that's kind of a lazy or just an easy low-hanging fruit. You used that term earlier about LSU and baseball. I think it was just kind of – it fits the easy low-hanging fruit term, but I truly believe that. I feel like he's going to embrace it. They're going to play a tough, hard-nosed style that Kentucky fans will be proud of. I think they'll give him a little more slack in being a Kentucky guy, right, wrong, and different. But I think they're going to be pretty good this year. I like the Garrison kid they got from Oklahoma State today, or yesterday, the big guy. What was that this morning? The day's running together. Mm. But I like him. They're going to probably add the big shooter from the kid from Dayton. It's so good. The good shooter. And then from an Arkansas standpoint, going back to Cal, chances are they go get the John L. Davis kid, the big kid, the point guard from FAU. It was so
big,
good.
Big Z went to Arkansas too, right? Big Z
followed him. Big Z's in Arkansas now. hell, I like some of the guys you mentioned from what Texas got. A little bit. We were talking a little bit off air about them. I like some of those guys as well. The Jordan Pope, the Oregon State transfer kid. And then they speak in Arkansas. Tremont Mark, who was at Arkansas, is now going to be with Rodney Terry in Texas. So everybody's adding some key pieces. You see some teams like Auburn retaining Jani Broome. I think SEC, you add an Oklahoma and Texas into it again. It's kind of like with the other two big sports, baseball and football. You only just keep getting deeper and deeper and raising the roof for that conference. So I think it'll be fun basketball next year. But to answer your question, I really think I think both are going to be good, man. I'm usually not a fence rider. I hate saying that. I feel like I'm on some like us just hyping up Arkansas and Kentucky, but I do think both teams are going to be good. It's funny seeing these teams go at it on the social media wars with their Kentucky mom and the Arkansas mom.
Dave, we're cramming this here at the end of the show, and we could have spent a lot more of this show talking about it, but you got me thinking. You know, I feel confident saying that Texas in football for sure, but I was sitting here thinking, who do you think is of Texas and Oklahoma, who's going to make the bigger splash in each of the individual sports immediately? Like, I think Texas, obviously, football, they're going to be a contender for the SEC championship. I mean, I just think they are – and nobody on this, certainly this platform, is going to shed a tear me saying this, but Texas is far ahead, I think, of Oklahoma right now. I know OU beat them last year, but with the questions of a new quarterback, line of scrimmage for OU, the schedule is a gauntlet for them. It's going to be tough. So I would go Texas. When you look at basketball, baseball, who do you think of the two programs is more well-equipped to make an immediate splash and maybe contend?
Basketball, I'll give the slight edge. I mean, I like both head coaches. I like Rodney Terry and Porter Moser from Oklahoma. I mean, both have been to the – Oklahoma missed it last year. Texas was in it for back-to-back year. I'll give Texas the edge in basketball. I think they're going to bounce back, be pretty good this year. And then in baseball, I mean, you've seen success out of both of them recently. Oklahoma lost Ole Miss in the championship series 2 years ago. Texas has been to, what, 2 to 3 World Series appearances under David Pierce.
Baseball
is the coin. Yeah, baseball is the coin flip. So what, Oklahoma's ranked, what, 18th now or 20th? I mean, Oklahoma's probably bad. I know Texas just won the series, but so far, consistency, who's been better as the year's gone on this year in baseball? Oklahoma. Man, you're right. That's the toss-up one. I think it's definitely Texas in the first two, and basketball is slim margin, but I still got to give Texas the edge. Baseball, if you're going to put me on the spot – I'll say Texas. I'll go with Texas, and that's not by a lot at all. That's not just because we're on the show. But, yeah, I'll go Texas. I'll give them the clean sweep in the Big Three.
It's going to be interesting. And that's the exciting thing, Dave, is I think, obviously, from the football standpoint, we're all pumped about the new members of the SEC. But what Texas and Oklahoma bring to the hardwood and to the baseball diamond, and really all the other sports as well, even the ones that aren't revenue-generating, right?
Softball.
Yeah. Softball especially.
No, that's probably the deepest. Let's be honest. That's probably the deepest sport in the SEC.
I think I saw you talking about that on social media. Yeah,
dude, it's got to be. They're all good. I mean, Arkansas used to be awful in softball. Now they're like a consistent top 10 team, which is what, like good for fifth or sixth in the SEC? And then you're adding in Oklahoma, who's had their own dynasty in baseball. Yeah. And then Texas is good.
Yeah. I think they're number one right now, actually, in the country.
Yeah.
Texas softball is number one, I think. So there you go. There you go. Guys, we've run up against 5 o'clock. You can appreciate each and every single one of you tuning in. Be sure to check us out all across social media, YouTube, podcast, wherever you get your content. We'll be there at SEC Unfiltered. I'm Chris Phillips at CPhilly19. He's Dave Shoemate at Mach 10 Sports. Again, we are SEC Unfiltered. We do this every single day, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 4 Central Time, right here on Texas Sports Unfiltered. And make sure you stay tuned. We'll be right back here in this spot tomorrow. For Dave Shoemate, I'm Chris Phillips. Guys, you have a great rest of your Tuesday, and we will talk to you all tomorrow. Y'all take care.